Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 2nd of Adar. And today we are going to study the Tzitz Eliezer about a Kohen traveling in a bus over graves. So in the 12th volume of Tzitz Eliezer, Simon Samach Bet, the 62nd responsum, the discussion and the question is about a Kohen going in a bus over a road that passes over ancient Jewish graves, meaning there was a feeling, there was a tradition, there was a tradition, right? It was a traditional belief. There are certain roads in Yerushalayim, especially around Har HaZeitim, where the road had already been built, but that in earlier times there had been graves there. So graves, the halacha is, and this is the problem with tum'ah, that when you have tum'ah, when you have ritual impurity, we think in certain circumstances that it rises all the way up. It doesn't stay where it is, meaning one kind of tum'ah you can get, one kind of ritual impurity you can get, is, God forbid, something happens, you have to touch a person who passed away. Let's say if you're going to prepare them for death is a good way, burial is a good way that it could happen in a positive sense, but that person becomes tameh. They become ritually impure. Kohanim are not allowed to do that, not because it's not good to do, but because they have a different role in the Jewish people. They're not allowed to do that. In addition, tumah is bokat, especially tumah rituta, tumah that's in an enclosed space, we think rises all the way up and goes all the way down without a barrier, until it hits a barrier of some sort. The question is, what kind of a barrier can it hit? So like an ohel is a barrier, or some kind of a covering or a tent is a barrier. And the question is, if you have graves under these roads, there doesn't seem to be any barrier for those graves, and therefore, can a Kohen ride in a bus? Now, you might say, well, let the bus be the ohel, right? Let the bottom of the bus be the barrier between the tum'ah, between the ritual impurity, and it rising up and affecting the Kohen. That's why, by the way, Kohanim have a problem going into hospitals. It's why Kohanim have a problem sometimes, according to some views, riding certain kinds of airplanes, because if those airplanes are going to transport, this I think was for a while a problem with El Al in particular, you had to worry that people were being brought, sadly, to Eretz Yisrael for burial. I guess it's happy for them they're being brought to burial. It's sad, usually, that they've passed away. So in those situations, you have these problems. So this is a reminder that there are whole areas of halakha that are mostly not paid attention to today. There are some areas of halakha that are completely not paid attention to because they're not relevant. There are other areas of halakha that are paid attention to every so often in certain circumstances, but they feel like they're very esoteric, they're very technical, they're very not relevant to real Jewish life, as it were, but really they were meant to be part of Jewish life in general. And in a time when there's a Beit HaMikdash, we'd all have to wonder about and think about these issues, because before a Jew could go visit the Beit HaMikdash, they would have to make sure that they didn't have any of these kinds of impurity. And even after they prepared themselves, they'd have to make sure that they didn't reincur such kinds of impurity. For today, it mostly affects Kohanim, because Kohanim are the ones who have a continuing requirement not to be involved. Now, I want to say that we're also going to see two quick tshuvot of the Tzitz Eliezer on the same issue, meaning number 62 is a response to a question about number 63 is a brief follow-up. And number 63, the brief follow-up, is the one that's actually dated the 2nd of Adar. But despite that, or maybe because I was so interested in giving us a chance to encounter these kinds of issues, because it should broaden our experience of halakha, it should remind us that halakha is much broader than we often experience it as being, I wanted to do this. So that's what we're going to talk about. So the original tshuva in number 62 is a question that's raised on this issue. So one issue is the bus, if you want to call that an ohel, the problem is that it's a moving ohel, right? You want to say that the bus is an enclosure, and as an enclosure, at the bottom of it should stop, or even the whole thing of it should stop and protect against, right? It should protect against the tumah coming in, and that happens too, right? So the problem is an ohel zaruk. It's a moving ohel. So a moving ohel doesn't provide the same protection. That's one issue, one concern. And so too, the second concern is b'mashahotibus mitzupe gam b'matechet. The bus is made of several materials, but among them is, and a lot of it is, metal. And metal receives tumah. Metal is something that if you touch tumah to a metal, the metal becomes tameh in various circumstances, but it can become tameh, can become ritually impure. And usually we say that something that is susceptible to ritual impurity, something that something that's susceptible to itself becoming tameh, becoming ritually impure, cannot be considered a chatzitza, a barrier to stop tumah, to stop ritual impurity from progressing, as it were. Right? So as I'm saying these things, I recognize that these are terms that don't quite make a lot of sense because we think in physical terms. And we generally, now there are those, by the way, who think of, there are, I mean, important people. I don't mean just those. There are important Rishonim who think of Tuma as being some kind of a physical thing, just not one we're used to dealing with and looking at. So if you think of those terms, this is more logical, I guess, right? It would be like you'd say, well, if metal can receive Tuma, that would suggest that it's pervious to it. It's not impervious to it. It's permeable, and it can receive it. And if it can receive it, it can't be a barrier against it. That's what it would seem like. And then that should be true even if it's an ohel, even if it's an enclosure. So that's a problem. So these two problems are what the Tzitzler is going to suggest. So he says that one idea for a heter is there's a Mishnah Lamelech. I'm sorry, the man who wrote it to him, and I didn't include it when I cut these up so that I can quickly go through them as I'm reading, as I'm explaining them to you here. So I don't always include the person. It usually means that it wasn't somebody who caught my eye, which doesn't mean they were an important person. It means that I didn't happen to know their name when I was doing it. So he says, you who wrote me gave an idea for how a heter could work. You had quoted the Mishnah Lamelech. Mishnah Melech is an important, it's not really a commentary on the Rambam, but it's printed as a commentary on the Rambam. It was really a separate work written about the Rambam as a separate work, and then somebody cut it up and put it around the Rambam in the places that it fit. So it's very important, very well-respected work. So in the 11th chapter of Hilchot Tumat HaMeit, of the laws of the impurity created by corpses in the third halakha, he says that when we say that an ohel zaruk lo shmei ohel, that if it's a moving ohel, a moving enclosure, does not count as an enclosure to stop tuma, to stop ritual impurity from entering, hainu dafka b'poreach b'avir, that's only when we're talking about an ohel that is flying in the air, meaning it's moving through the air. But if it's being dragged on the ground, so the Mishnah Melech says, that's considered an ohel. That would serve as an enclosure, and it would serve as a barrier to tuma entering. Now, that's an interesting claim. What that claims is that we see in the Gemara, we see the sources that say, ohel zaruk is not an ohel, which literally means a thrown ohel, is not an ohel. The question becomes, is that because of its movement, or is that because when it's in the air, it has no basis in anything? That's what the Mishnah Melech seems to be claiming. The Mishnah Melech is saying, since an ohel being dragged on the ground is connected to the ground, it's sort of like an ohel, just moving. That gets into all sorts of interesting halakha questions that come up in other contexts, too, about how we define movement in halakha. If you think about it non-halakhically for a second, when things move, second by second, they're not moving, so they just go very, very quickly. But you can break down that movement to smaller pieces. So there are those who hold in other contexts in halakha that movement isn't so important to us, and that even things that are moving are sort of like they're in this place and they move to this place, but each place they're stopping in. And if that were true, you can imagine why you could say it would still count as an ohel. But in the air, since it has no connection to a ground, it's not based, it's not grounded in anything, literally not grounded in anything, therefore it would be a problem. That's what the Mishnah Melech claimed. It's not the only way of seeing the issue, but that's his claim. If that were true, then you could say that a car could be seen, or a bus could be seen as an ohel that's being dragged on the ground. And the Mishnah Melech had said that if it's being dragged on the ground, it's chotzeitz, it stops tuma, according to everybody. Then you wouldn't have to worry about it. You wouldn't have to worry about a kohen riding a bus, even if the bus passed over graves under the ground, right? And you'd have to worry about the tuma coming up, and rising up and hitting them. No, because this ohel would protect them. Now, you could say, well, it's the wheels of the car or of the bus that are spinning, and maybe the bus itself is not on the ground, right? It's the wheels that are on the ground, but the bus as an ohel is not on the ground. So he says, no, that doesn't change it, he doesn't think. And the reason why he doesn't think it changes it, because there's a Tosfot in Sukkah that's talking about a different context, talking about animals being thought of as an ohel. The Gemara says that the Torah tells us that animals can be thought of as an ohel. And the Tosfos says if you hadn't thought of that, you would have said that it's because the body of the animal isn't dragged along the ground, so you might have said that about a machoni. I'm sorry, that's not the reason why it's not a problem. That's the reason why you might have thought it's a problem. You might have thought that just like the Tosot assumes that when it comes to an animal, since the body of the animal isn't on the ground, you wouldn't have thought of it as an ohel being dragged along the ground. You would have thought of it as separate from the ground, as a ohel zaruk. And the Torah has to come and tell you that no animals count on the ground, But to solve that problem, the man who had written him quoted a Svat Emet and other Achronim, the Tiferet Yisrael, a commentary on Mishnah in Ohalot, and others who all say that when we talk about Ohal Zaruk being a problem in terms of not qualifying as an Ohal, that's in terms of what's around them in the air. They'll be buttled to the air around them, but in terms of being a Mechitza, that Tuba from the bottom shouldn't come up, that everybody seems to say it would qualify as an Ohal for. So, therefore, first step is that we've gotten so far is that he's shown that there's authorities who say that even though a bus might not be an Ohel Zaruk, even though the Mishnah Melech claims that things that are being dragged on the ground, let's say you have a big, a big chest of drawers, and you're dragging it on the ground, the fact that it's being dragged on the ground doesn't make an Ohel Zaruk because it's on the ground. So that would be step one, to say that a bus would be like not an Ohel Zaruk, would be a regular Ohel, and therefore would interrupt Tumah, and the Kohanim on the bus don't have to worry because it's on the ground. Problem with that is the wheels. You might say, well, the wheels lifted off the ground, and therefore it's not an Ohel Zaruk. Isn't that more like an animal whose body is off the ground, and the only reason it serves as an Ohel is because there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, the Gemara understands to say that it qualifies as an Ohel. So to respond to that, there's lots of Achronim who say that when we talk about an Ohel Zaruk, it's not relevant to our question anyway, because an Ohel Zaruk is what's going on in the air around that Ohel, but things that are coming up from underneath that Ohel, and that every degree that it would be an Ohel in terms of, would be an enclosure, in terms of interrupting that tumma. So if we accept all of that reasoning, then we have solved the first problem. Isn't it an Ohel Zaruk, and therefore can't qualify as a barrier to tumma? The answer is no. We're not going to treat it as an Ohel Zaruk, either because it's not an Ohel Zaruk because it's being dragged along the ground, and the fact that it's on wheels doesn't matter, or in fact, it matters that it's not being dragged on the ground, but the whole idea of an Ohel Zaruk is only important for the air around it, not what's coming up from beneath it. Okay. What about the second problem? It's metal, and metal is susceptible to ritual impurity, and if it's susceptible, it would seem not to be able to be a barrier to ritual impurity. So there, the man writing to the Tzitzitzer had said that he pointed out there's a Rash. The Rashbi Shatz is one, a very important Mishnah commentary, but it's mostly on, maybe only on, Mishnayos in Zra'im and Taharot, which don't have Gemaras on them. So he wrote commentaries of those Mishnayot. And he had claimed that that in the case of an Ohel, in the case of an enclosure that's going to be serving either as a barrier or not as a barrier, we're going to try to think of it as a barrier against ritual impurity, it doesn't matter what it's made of, he held. He held that even though it's Mekabel Tumah, it's susceptible to ritual impurity, it can nonetheless be Matzil Ala Tumah. It can nonetheless stop such impurity from entering and affecting those inside of it. At least when it comes to impurity coming up from beneath. So, just like before we had said, something might be considered an Ohel Zaruk in general, but that doesn't stop it from being a barrier to that which is coming up underneath, like we said back where we're still talking about whether it's an Ohel Zaruk, a moving Ohel or not. So too, in terms of materials, said the Rash, even though it's made of a material that's susceptible to Tumah, that would not stop it from being a barrier for Tumah that's Boka'at Ve'ola, that rises up from underneath. Now if you want to try to think about this logically, part of what I think we're saying here, and it comes up in the rest of the Tshuva as well, part of what we're saying here is that this whole idea of Tumah Boka'at Ve'ola, that when you have Tumah buried way underneath the ground, and it's all crowded in, and the tumah rises all the way up to heaven. What does that mean? So, right, even if we're thinking of it as a physical entity, what does it mean that it rises up, and how strong is it compared to, or what's its relationship with the original tumah? So it might be that you could argue, and I think this would be part of what we're saying here, although I'm just trying to give us some sensibility to what we're talking about, because the Tzitzit just talks about it all in the concepts. Meaning, when you do halakhic analysis, you do halakhic analysis by thinking of reasons behind things and then working it that way. Or you can do halakhic analysis, and it's not invalid. You can do halakhic analysis in a fully valid way where you deal with everything fully technically. You just see sources, and you just see the ideas that they say, and you see where things do apply and don't apply, and then you work on the basis of that. That's most of the way that Caesar is writing right here. I'm just trying to suggest that part of what he might be saying is that when we talk about Tumah being Bokat V'Olah, we talk about Tumah, ritual impurity, that rises up from being buried way underneath the ground, it keeps rising up, that nonetheless is not as strong as, whatever those words mean, but it's not as invasive as ordinary Tumah. So the fact that metal is susceptible to ritual impurity, that would be in contact with, or in, you know, in full presence of the original tumah. But in terms of tumah b'kad v'olah, the Rash could be saying to us that even though the metal is susceptible to it in touch, it's not susceptible to it if it's just presenting a barrier against tumah that's b'kad v'olah. And so too, the Rambam in the 13th chapter of Hilchos Tumah, Beit Halacha Dalid, says something similar. So if that's true, so the tzitzir with a mechonit, with a car or a bus, even if we say that it's something that's susceptible to tumah, that if you touched tumah to it, you touch ritual impurity, it would become ritually impure. And then he throws in that it makes sense to say that it would be the bottom of an hole as well. That's not explicitly stated in halacha, but you might have thought maybe it's only a slide, but he says, no, there's no reason to. You think that the bottom of the hole would also stop, and that's all the man wrote. I'm sorry, this is all part of what the man wrote to the Ezer, try to find out whether it's true. These are his words, and he calls them b'chukamim. They're, you know, very wise, and this is what he's going to say. He thinks that the foundation of the Mishnah Melech, that it's not considered an Oel Zaruk, is very strong, even though there are other tshuvot who say that there's a shoot in Birchat Ritzeh, is the name of a book, that the Mishnah Melech said it meant it only when the whole thing is being dragged on the ground. So, this says, I don't think it's true. And the Rambam Paskins in the second chapter of Hilchot Para, so just let's remember that the Tzitzitzer immediately knows Hilchos Para to bring them into here. But see, Hilchos Para is the laws of the Para Aduma. One of the challenges in the Para Aduma, let's remember, it's the animal that you would slaughter and then burn and use the ashes mixed in with water to remove the ritual impurity associated with contact with a corpse. So the Mishnah talks about the challenge of producing a Para Aduma because you wanted to make sure that nothing went wrong in terms of ritual impurity in the production of the Para Aduma, because then it would ruin the whole Para Aduma. And there, these red cows, these red heifers are very rare anyway. You didn't want to risk that. So part of what they did was they would raise these children. That's what the Mishnah tells us. They would raise children special for this thing. From the time they were little, they were raised in an environment where it was impossible. It was all stone around it, and it was, you know, and it was built on a platform so that with stone bottoms, so there was no way tumah can get into them. And every effort was made. Everything was done to make sure these children, as they grew up, could not come into contact with ritual impurity. And then when they wanted to have them go out to wherever they were going to burn the Paraduma, they would ride them on oxen or bulls, and they would put doors on the backs of these bulls, and they would sit on the doors. So the point of the door is to stop if this bull, as it's walking, happens to pass over a place where there's ritual impurity buried in the ground, the door would stop it. So if the Rambam says that, right, So what the Tzitzis are pointing out, so that means that you can consider something not Noel Zaruk, would seem, according to the Rambam, even if it's moving and even if not all of it is on the ground, because the door is not on the ground, it's on the back of the animal. And that's also where the Svarim gets the idea that maybe even an Oel Zaruk, even if it is a moving Oel, right? One option is to say it's not a moving Oel, and that solves the problem. The other option is to say, no, it's a moving Oel, but maybe a moving Oel can stop ritual impurity that's coming up from underneath, and maybe that's what's going on here. So you have both options. Now, he does note that the Chazon Ish said exactly the opposite in Yoredei. The Chazon Ish says that Merkavot Shel Oto, right, or Rakevet, right, a train or a car that pass over a cemetery, pass over graves, right? Because sometimes these roads or these railways are built over old cemeteries. He says, it's not a katitza. He doesn't think it protects you against it because he held that Noel Zaruk, a moving Ohel, and that would be a problem in a plane also, by the way, a moving Ohel is not considered an Ohel, even though the wheels are being dragged on the ground. That was the position of the Chazon Ish. Tzitzis says, for all that was the position of the Chazon Ish, I think there's room here for us to build a heter on these foundations. But all that only worked for the Rambam, right, who the Mishnah Melech was working off. But there's the Tosfos seem to think for sure that even if something's dragged along the ground, it's still considered an Ohel Zaruk, and then that gets in the way of much of what we've been talking about here, because one whole segment of our finding a heter, finding permissibility, was they were saying that even an Ohel Zaruk can protect against that it's not considered an Ohel Zaruk. But and then we had other opinions that even if it's an Ohel Zaruk, it could still block it. But that's we've cut out, you know, once we start dealing with the Tosfos, we've cut out a segment of what we're going to create this permissibility. And in general, in halacha, we have a situation that seems impermissible, and we're trying to find ways to say it is permissible. We don't generally rely on just one idea. We generally assume that we want more than one idea. We want to combine things together that would make it more and more clear that there's more and more of a consensus that we can find room to say that it's okay. So this is, I found a tshuva in Shoel Umeshiv, which is Rav Yosef Shaul Natanzon, who says that Ohel Zaruk, if it's made that way, meaning I know El Zaruk again means a throne enclosure, but the Rav Yosef Shalnan said, but if it's made to move, then it's considered like it's fixed. Meaning his claim was that the whole idea of an El Zaruk was because it's being moved when it's normally stationary, and therefore it's not doing its usual function of being an enclosure. But you can have enclosures whose job is to move, and he claimed that in those situations it's not considered an Ohel Zaruk. Now, it's only true, therefore, of a car or of a bus, and the Shoel HaMeishiv, therefore, is a big help, because it's not an Ohel Zaruk anymore, because then it's maybe covering over a grave and a corpse that would ordinarily create tumah, but it's an Ohel, and an Ohel stops it. No, the problem was it's an Ohel Zaruk, according to some opinions of the Shoel HaMeishiv, so I guess, no, it's not, because its purpose is to move. And since the purpose is to move, then you don't have to worry about it. And a piece of all this is, we said how the wheels are lifting the thing off the ground, so that helps also, because there were those who had a problem with whether or not, this becomes a question of, the idea of tumah that goes up and just rises up, is if it's called what's tumah ritzutza, if it's tumah that's crowded in together on itself, there's no space. But usually if there's a space around it of a tefach, which is only like 3 or 4 inches, depending on your count of inches, of tefachim, but if there's an open space of 3 or 4 inches, so sometimes in coffins, you'd think there is that much space, and sometimes there's not, so that's a question. So if there were to be, then you wouldn't have this problem of tumah rising. But the Shut Malamed Loel, the Tetzelezer points out to, says we don't usually think of coffins as being, you usually don't have that much open space all around to protect the tumah. We're not convinced that there are, and therefore we'd worry about that. But he says the wheels are almost always at least a tefach, and therefore this bus or car or train is off the ground, and that area should count as a tefach, and therefore it should be a barrier. It should be like it's in it, and therefore the bottom of the train or the bottom of the bus should be able to count as an ohel, and therefore stop it as well. With all that, Rav Tzvi Pitzel Frank had quoted an opinion of Rav Yehoshua Leib Diskin, and he had said, the Maril Diskin, who was an important time chacham of the 19th century, had said what you should do is you should make a Neser Bolate in the back of the wagon. I mean, he's already still talking in Europe in times of wagons. Somebody told me recently they were like in Poland or somewhere else in Eastern Europe where they still drive by horse driven, they still get around with horse driven wagons. So in a horse driven wagon, you have all these same questions, right? And that the question is, can you rely on the bottom of the wagon as an OL? And he said, my real Diskin had said, that what you have to do is you should attach on. You know, it's a Neser Bolate. When I first thought of it, I was thinking like a wooden plank. But he means like a big wooden plank on the back of the wagon. Have it sort of stick out the back of the wagon so that Kohanim would be strong enough to hold a Kohen, or as many Kohanim as you're going to be having transporting in that wagon, so that they can stand or sit on that wooden plank, because a plain wooden plank is called the pshute kliyot. So pshute kliyot are simple planks of wood. They're not mekabel tumah. They're not susceptible to ritual impurity. That's why, for example, theoretically, one could use just planks of wood for schach, because it grew on the ground and it's not mekabel tumah. So if those planks become like wide, if they're wider and wide and long, if they're like real squares of wood, that becomes a problem in terms of building sukkot. We don't use such things, but regular ordinary wooden planks, 2x4s, are perfectly fine to use for schach because they grew on the ground. So the pshute kliyot, the mekabel tumah, that's the point. They're just plain. If they're turned into some kind of a usable item, or they get what's called a clay kibul, if they have some ability to contain and hold things in them, let's say you make a wooden bowl, that's mekabel tumah. But a pshute kliyot is not mekabel tumah. So therefore, my real Diskin said, that's what you should do. You should make sure that all these wagons, you have a neser bolate in the back. You should put hard, strong wood in the back that's just plain wood, and the Kohanim who are there can sit there whenever they go over, if they ever pass over, graves. So an example of that was in Har HaZeitim. There was this worry. Already back then they knew the worry that the roads that went up to Har HaZeitim or went down or went around or near Har HaZeitim, the Mount of Olives, ran over graves, and therefore the Kohanim would sit on these planks to avoid the problem. Rav Tzvi Pitzel Frank adds that seems to be the reason why you have that, people have that I'm sorry. The reason why you do it in the back is because inside the agala, inside the wagon, it's already got an oel on top of it. And so if you're worried about the oel issues, you're worried that, let's say, it's not a barrier. So if it's not a barrier and the ritual impurity rises up into the oel, then the oel, the enclosure, might enclose it in it. And the kohen is now not only passing over, but he's within an enclosure that brings the tumah, the original ritual impurity on him. And therefore, that's why Maharal Diskin said, so get out of the oel and go to the plank in the back and you'll be okay. And the rumors are that that was the source of the practice that happened out of time, that you would put some kind of wood inside a car or a bus that you were riding in. If you were a Kohen, they would have it, and that whenever they were going over, the Kohen would go stand on that, which is actually slightly different, because that would assume that the fact that somebody's within an enclosure isn't a problem, right? My real Diskin had said, put the wood in the back of the wagon, and therefore he's not under the enclosure, he's not under anything, and therefore he's protected. There's a barrier between him and the tumah, and there's nothing to bring the tumah onto him from the enclosure. But this custom seems to have devolved into just, well, if they stand on a wooden plank for the time they're going over the graves, so the wood will stop it from hitting him from the bottom, but it doesn't do anything about the oil part. They seem to have ignored that part about it. Then it throws in brackets and parentheses, he says, it's very interesting that all of these Gaonim that we're talking about, all of these authorities, we're talking about these issues, none of them bring up the fact that these trains and some of these wagons are connected to each other with metal nails, right? Iron nails, steel nails, whatever they're made of, and many of them are covered, whether they're made of metal or not. Some of them are made of metal, but certainly many of them are covered with metal. And so he says, it must be that they all agree that they think that the metal is not a problem, either because the metal is just supporting the wood. That would mean if you were in a train that was made fundamentally of metal, or a bus that's made fundamentally of metal, right? I think he's talking about a situation where the frame is basically of wood, but it's covered with metal. But if it's made of metal, then that would be different. But he's saying here, we're thinking about that the metal, it must be that we're all assuming that the metal, since it's just supportive of the wood, then it's not makabel tumah, it's not susceptible to ritual impurity, because it's not metal on its own, it's now made subordinate, subservient to the wood. That's a whole set of claims of its own. And then he sends us to there's some Rav who was the head of the of Beis Din in Pressburg, but not related to the Chatzim Sofer at all that I can tell. And he held that the Rambam held that an Ohel Zoruk is considered an Ohel, and therefore he said a Kohen can go in a plane, because even if you're going to pass over cemeteries and it goes all the way up, nonetheless, the plane counts as an Ohel. That's what he had said. So that would be relevant here as well in this whole discussion. He seems to think that might be a valid way of thinking about it. But he says, helping us out with all this is that we're not clear that on any of these roads, for sure, that there are Jewish graves underneath them. And Tumat Ohel, the ritual impurity that created by the something from the corpse rising up, or by making the same enclosure or something, that only applies to Jewish deceased. There's Tumah. There can be ritual impurity created by contact with a non-Jewish deceased person, but the Tumat Ohel is only created by Jewish. So here, the roads, we don't know that they're for sure the grave. We have good information that there are graves underneath here, but we don't know that those graves are Jewish graves. So therefore, we have a suffix here in a Tumah Dirabanan. It's a rabbinic form of Tumah. I don't remember which kind of Tumah is rabbinic here, but it's a rabbinic form of Tumah that we're talking about. I think it might be the fact that Tumah is Bokad Vola, maybe, is only rabbinic. I'm not positive. And by the way, there's a Me'iri, he says, there's a Me'iri in Erivan who says that if it's a matter of Suffolk, you're not sure about whether there's Tumah, then forget that you think it might not be an Ohel Zaruk. Even if it were an Ohel Zaruk, that's fine. Because the whole worry about an Ohel Zaruk, about a thrown enclosure, yes or no, being able to or not able to interrupt the Tumah, is only a question of a well-known tumah, a well-known and a well-established ritual impurity. But if it's a suffix, then you don't have to, in a suffix situation, you don't have to worry about an Ohel Zoruk. It accomplishes the goal of protecting against tumah. And just to help out a little bit, meaning the Me'iri is not a full authority of his own in this way, I think is what he means. It's not like a well-established, accepted opinion, but it helps, because every little bit, right, and the more we can construct reasons to think that something is allowed, the more it works. And according to all of this, he thinks that it's allowed, that you can, Kohanim can ride in these buses because of all these reasons he's given. He says it is better, if somebody wants to find a broad plank of wood, just simple plain wood, and to take it with him, as it were. And then, you know, like on Yom Kippur, when people bow down in shul, they put out down towels so they don't bow straight down on the floor. So here too, he's saying, like, carry a plank. If you're calling, carry a plank of wood with you. And when you get to the parts of the road where you're worried about it, so put it underneath you and stand on it. It'll help somewhat, right? Because of, if there's an opinion that says this is this, this will add one more piece to it if you want to. But fundamentally, he thinks that it's okay. You don't have to worry about it. So that was all actually not the tshuva written on the second of Adar, but it's put in the book, the tshuva before number Tzamach Gimel, which is from the second of Adar. And here he mentions that this response that he had written was printed somewhere, was published somewhere, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was a good friend of his, this says he was a good friend, and they were good friends. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was about 5-6 years older than him, but they knew each other for a long time. They were very friendly. We've seen together other tshuvot where they talk about various things, and they have correspondence with each other. So he writes to Tzeliezer a letter, which is always fascinating to me because they're both living in Yerushalayim, but he writes him a letter. And in the letter, he says, I liked reading, you know, almost all you wrote. He says, Rubeh had very, most of what you wrote I thought was very good, very valuable. I enjoyed reading it. But I want to mention that this whole Mishnah Melech that you said is only in a situation where the Oel Zaruk, the throne enclosure, where the Mishnah Melech is a throne enclosure that's being dragged on the ground, is not considered an Oel Zaruk, is not considered an Oel, is not considered not an Oel, is not invalidated by the fact that it's moving. He said that's only when it's passing over Ohel Hamet, when it's passing over an enclosure with a body in it, right? But in our situation, there are times when the roads go over, it's not that we think they go over cemeteries where people are buried in coffins, and the coffins are in enclosures, such that it passes over actual bodies just in the ground. So actual bodies just in the ground, then there's no possibility that they were enclosed in anything, and then it's just their tumah coming up. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thought that in that situation, the tumah rises up, the ritual impurity rises up and goes in to the ohel underneath the ceiling of the ohel, the enclosure, and therefore he thinks that in that situation the plank wouldn't help at all. Meaning, if you're going to rely on the fact that it's an ohel zaruk, is considered an ohel, that the moving ohel is considered an ohel, it's still going to be a problem because the plank won't help you out, be a barrier. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach held. And he held, you can't say the bottom of the bus or car or train helps out, because that too is an ohel zaruk. That too is a moving ohel. We just said, in the case of passing over an actual body, moving ohel doesn't help. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said. Briefly, I know I'm over time, but briefly, in the tshuva from the second of Adar of Tafshin Lamed Hay of 1975, the Tzeliezer responds that he thinks that the point of the plank is that when the tumah hits it, it will stop it. So Shlomo Zalman had said, yeah, but then it'll go around, or it'll have hit other parts of this enclosure, and from there, it will be, the Kohen will be now in an ohel with ritual impurity. So it says the fact that that's true, he thinks changes things. That problem is not a problem for, so that extra piece of it having to go up and around, as it were, and then hit him, he says that's a snifle heter. He thinks that would help in addition to all the other pieces of the heter, and therefore, with all the things that he said, since it becomes like an enclosure on top of an enclosure, and the only problem is that you have to think of it as a moving enclosure, he thinks all of this could work out. Not only that, one last piece, you have, as we said before, you have the tefach space underneath the car. Underneath the car, we do say that in the case of a tefach space, very often we say that the tumah doesn't rise up anymore. So the Tzeliezer says, at least iklash al yedei kach tumah. The tumah gets weakened by it, and therefore it shouldn't be a problem in these situations. So that is the discussion of the Tzeliezer is about the fundamental question, the basic question of, can you ride in a bus or a car if it's passing over Jewish graves, passing over plates, and the tradition is there are Jewish graves there. That's a whole set of questions that we discuss, ending up with a little bit of a correspondence between the Tzeliezer and Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, when the Tzeliezer writing on the second Advadar of Tafshin Lamed Hay, the second Advadar of 1975. And that is a response of a day for the second Advadar. Have a great day.